Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. And we've been in Prime Minister's questions this afternoon, James, and it finished relatively early, actually. It was only 45 minutes long. How do you think it went?
I mean, the most striking thing about PMQs today was that Jeremy Corbyn went on Brexit. This is a subject he normally avoids at PMQs. But today he felt confident enough to go on it. I don't think he did as good a job as he could have done. But he made Theresa May clearly a little bit uncomfortable with some of the questions. And it also, I think the other reflection you were left with as you left the chamber was there's an awful lot to be decided at this Cabinet away day on Thursday. You know, there was a moment when Jeremy Corbyn asked her what she wanted and she stood up and said a bespoke economic partnership and sat down again. That is something that the government could have said a day after the referendum. You know, where's the detail? There is, you know, and I think the big question becomes how much meat is she going to put on this bone?
Katie, do you think the Prime Minister did a reasonably good job given she hasn't yet got the meat for the bone?
Yeah, I think she got through it and I don't think it was...
Well, she didn't run out screaming.
She ran out screaming. I don't think it was embarrassing. I think it was fairly competent. I don't think you would have watched it and been like, oh God, this woman's got a plan. Like, do you know what I mean? Where do I sign up? But also, I don't think you'd be watching it and...
Yeah. I think it'd be hard to clip it down to say... This is why the government's position's a disaster.
Yeah, and I think if you're anxious about Brexit, I don't think you've changed it. If you're excited about Brexit, I don't think we've changed it. But so I think it was a competent performance. And partly in a way, all she has to do right now is hold the line because she hasn't decided yet. And that's what this whole meeting is about. We're placing so much pressure on it in the media, you know, saying this is the crunch meeting. We said there was a crunch meeting 2 weeks ago. This is really the crunch meeting. But therefore... Because we are expecting something quite soon, I think she could get away with a fairly competent kind of not so much performance.
James, did you think that Jeremy Corbyn made the most of some of the opportunities given to him by David Davis, for instance, with his Mad Max line and the ERG letter that Katie's written about on Coffee House today?
He went on the David Davis Mad Max line, which I think is kind of further proof, as Katie said yesterday, but it was a mistake. I don't think he did enough, which is... You can take Boris Johnson and Philip Hammond's statements made within the last few weeks, they're not ancient history, and you can put them side by side and they contradict each other. I think he should have done that and asked her which one's right, which one speaks for the government. You know, Boris Johnson said in his speech this time last week, or in more accurately in the Q&A at his speech this time last week, that he was opposed to the UK making any treaty commitment to follow the same rules as the EU on manufactured goods such as washing machines and the like. Was the Foreign Secretary speaking for the government when he said that? You know, why is he not put pressure on her like that? I find very, very puzzling.
But, Katie, Theresa May committed humour in this session. Tell us about this moment of joke.
Yeah, so I think this is probably a half pass, basically, or, you know, a half mark for humour, because it's Theresa May, we're going to give her a full mark, because it was so surprising.
Soft bigotry of low expectations.
Exactly. So this is after the Jeremy Corbyn checks by row that's been rumbling on. Theresa May commented that often Jeremy Corbyn comes up at the dispatch box and asks her basically for a blank cheque, which is interesting because he does like cheques. Is that it?
Yeah, right? it was something along those lines.
I think I actually delivered it worse than Theresa May, so that's the thing. But I thought it was interesting because how the Conservatives were handling what last week was a very interesting story, which raised questions about Jeremy Corbyn admits meeting with this man who he says he thought was a Czech diplomat. Turns out they worked in Czech intelligence. Questions about why he agreed to do that during, you know, the end of the Cold War time. Since then, it's kind of catapulted, and you have had, thanks to, you know, one person coming forward, you have claims basically that Jeremy Corbyn, which he denies, is a purposeful spy. But you've also had Tory MPs spreading that message, and they've had to retract. The one in question is currently perhaps going to have legal action unless they comply with what Jeremy Corbyn's solicitors want. And I thought actually Theresa May's handling of it, regardless of the fact she's criticised earlier in the week for not using her press conference to really go after him, was maybe how it's best to handle that, because it is an interesting thing that, but you shouldn't go too hard.
James, in terms of the rest of the session, Ian Blackford asked about Syria and pointed out that the level of bombing that's taking place there at the moment is quite extraordinary, even for this conflict. What was Theresa May's response?
Theresa May's response was, oh, to urge restraint on the Syrian government and its backers, the Russians. I do think it's quite interesting, though, that now, those people who are raising Syria are only raising Syria not to call for any actual action, but to call for a meeting. I mean, it is how far down the scale we've slid. And I think that this war in Syria has now been going on for so long, but it's an awful thing to say, but I think it's true. It has become kind of geopolitical background noise. I don't think it certainly doesn't excite newsrooms as much as the latest revelations about a Mueller investigation into Donald Trump or about North Korea or anything like that. It's just Syria just now seems to be a kind of established fact that there is this incredibly brutal civil war, and it goes on and it carries on going on. I think this is one of and I think it is one of those things when we always say, we must never turn a blind eye again. We do carry on turning blind eyes, and I think this is an example of it.
Katie, were there any backbench questions that caught your eye or ear?
I was personally found the question on blue passports quite entertaining. This was a constituent MP basically bringing up the fact that when we get these new passports, because we're leaving the EU, they're going to be blue. They're not going to cost, was it the 50 million that was falsely reported over Christmas in a fake news row? But therefore, they're going to have to be made again. And there are currently a few different companies bidding for it, one of which is in Britain in this MP's constituency. And basically, it was pressurising May or trying to get May to say, obviously, that it would be much better to have these passports made in Britain. But I think they highlight this quite difficult position the Conservatives find themselves in, because blue passports have got quite toxic. You have people on the Remain side often using them as an example of Little Britain, saying Brexit is an inward thing, and then on the Conservative side you have some people who would be like, I'd be very proud to have my blue passport, who feel very patriotic about it, and it becomes a little bit like a culture war. So I think it's quite a difficult one for the Conservatives, because actually, of course, they probably weren't going to stay maroon. That would be slightly odd, as James has pointed out previously. But it has somehow become very political, the fact they're going back to blue.
I think it's proof of what an outward-looking country we are, that people can consider the colour of the passport to be a sign of being inward-looking. You know, you have lots of countries where most people don't have a passport. We now, as a country, we make more than one foreign trip a year for every citizen on average. That is a remarkably outward-looking, global-facing country. And I think that, this debate over the passports, it is confected. And I think it is also, it is a silly row. And where should these passports be made? Well, where the taxpayer can get the best possible value. And whether that is Britain, France, or, Algeria shouldn't really make any difference.
And there were also questions from Scottish Conservative MPs who tend to use their slots normally to complain about something that the Scottish government is doing, which Theresa May then both attacks the Scottish government for, while saying this is a matter for the Scottish government, which always annoys the SNP. But we had a different sort of question today, James, about dogs.
Yes, so you had a Scottish Tory MP basically hijacking an SNP campaign against these electric shock collars for dogs. And I think what's interesting about this is two things. First of all, I think the reason you get so many SNP and Scottish Tory questions is that the Labour backbenches don't seem to be putting in for questions, which I think tells you something about the continuing state of morale in the Parliamentary Labour Party. But what's also interesting is it is this battle for credit going on between the SNP and the Scottish Tories. And I think it quite suits both sides, because to the Scottish Tories, it means they can get stories in the Scottish press about, Theresa May slams SNP plan to incorporate the British Transport Police into Police Scotland. And the SNP like it because they're never happier than when they're fighting the evil Tories. So I think you see here this attempt to kind of try and cut out Scottish Labour. Now, I think Scottish Labour will carry on doing better than it was from its very low base that it fell to after 2015, because Jeremy Corbyn and Richard Lennon now for this kind of left wing platform that kind of almost out lefts the SNP. But I think these exchanges are a reminder of how hard it will be for Scottish Labour to get back to the position that it once had in Scottish politics.
Yeah, I was speaking to one MP this week who was actually
complaining slightly of the culture in Westminster, basically the fact that lots of the newer MPs like to get photos with cabinet members to prove, you know, how important they are, and they've got like a word with Philip Hammond. And they're saying the one case where everyone won't make fun of them in the tea room about this is the Scottish Conservatives, because when they do meet with Philip Hammond, and also Philip Hammond was listening on the budget, it sends this very clear message, which is the message they're trying to get to everyone in Scotland, that you might have had the SNP down here, you know, a mass group for, you know, well, up until the snap election, but they didn't manage to get anything really done. Whereas having them in Westminster really means that you will achieve things, even if the campaigns now and then can be quite similar.
So it's their riposte to Nicola Sturgeon's strong voice for Scotland that she campaigned on in 2015. Well, thank you, Katie, and thank you, James, and thank you to Nick Hilton, who produced this podcast. You can listen to this podcast and all our other podcasts on the iTunes store, and this one is called Coffee House Shots. And if you enjoy this politics podcast, then you should really subscribe to the Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup and analysis of all the day's politics, and you can sign up at spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening.